Patriots Playbook.
Go Stack Guts Combat. Odds 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short.
Patriots Playbook.
Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on. Let's go.
Let me turn on the on button. That's how it works around here. Welcome back inside the playbook, everyone, on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook, joined today by E. Scow.
What up? I've been seeing you forever.
This is a real treat. It's a Tuesday, too.
I know.
You're going to be around for a nitpick Tuesday.
I am.
Reunited.
We'll pick nits.
We will pick nits. But I'm just, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised. I guess it's because it's a byproduct of the short week last week, right?
It is. That's exactly right.
Okay.
And plus, I was concerned about you. I felt like I had to come back in and find out.
You lie.
I was concerned about you. I mean, I didn't send you any tweets or Facebook messages because
I
knew you were going to be inundated. I knew you were working. I knew you were down in Puerto Rico, how was it, by the way?
It was excellent. It doesn't suck down there.
No?
No.
It does not?
It does not suck.
And Friars were meh.
Eh. Yeah. Just kind of meh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's okay because they were playing with five scholarship players the whole time we were down there.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like, hey, you got to win. Woo, let's move on, you know? So, no, everything's good. I mean, the last couple of weeks obviously have been kind of strange around here because the work schedules and the holidays schedules and the illness schedule. And by the way, I was just telling you before we began the program, do not ever go to Rhode Island Hospital.
Oh, I know. What?
Don't,
you were starting to explain it to me.
Don't go. Just don't go. The absolute worst experience. I mean, there are a couple of nurses that were in there that were really nice and very helpful. But then there was one lady at the very end who scared my girlfriend half to death by, you know, because they wanted me to stay overnight for testing. And there was no way in hell that was ever going to happen because I had to get up and get on a plane the next morning for San Juan.
Mm.
Now, had I, you know, the tests come back, you know, like there were some problems or some irregularities or whatever, obviously I'd have stayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything was clean. This lady came in and still tried to convince me, well, you really should have another battery of tests done. What they needed to do is they needed to sell a bed night. And so it took them less than 2 weeks now after I said no thank you, and I'm perfectly fine, I'm ornery as ever. It took them less than 2 weeks to send me a bill for more than $4,000.
All mostly ER, you said?
Yeah, yeah. No wonder this country is going to hell in a handbasket. It is. It's because of the costs involved. No wonder we're having the problems that we're having with our budgets and everything else.
We definitely need health care reform.
Oh, my Lord. But
big time.
Listen, dude, we won't get into the debate here, but Obamacare ain't the answer. It's just not the answer.
We need something to
change. We need something to change, but that's not the answer. Adding to our bloat is not the answer. That's all I'm going to say. And then... But okay. Just don't go to Rhode Island Hospital unless you, you know. I got back, when did we get back? A week ago. I came back. We did last Tuesday's show in here.
Okay.
We did last Tuesday's show in here.
When
and
was
then,
that last?
I don't know. Where were you?
Oh, we had locker room.
Yeah,
and
you had locker room
stuff.
Access
that's
during.
Right.
That's right.
That's
practice and locker
you.
Room were going
yeah,
on
yeah,
right
yeah.
during the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yep, yep.
So we had that, and then obviously no shows on Wednesday after PFW because that's when they sent everybody home here. So we repeated that. Obviously, game day was Thursday. Although I was in here on Thanksgiving because I was doing NBC Sports Radio that night. So I was watching the Patriots out of one eye, watching the Longhorns get punked by TCU in the other eye, and trying to conduct a national talk radio program. All at the same time. Nobody can say that I can't multitask.
Well, and I mean, you're the guy who wrote the book on Rhode Island radio, so I'm not surprised that
plug.
You're able to do that.
Thank you for the
I
plug.
Saw also the big write-up in the Projo.
You see that? Yeah.
I did see that right before
nice.
You left for San Juan.
Wasn't that real nice of them to do? That was very nice.
Yeah, that was. It
very
was
nice.
Nice spread, well laid out. Everything.
I did a little Q&A. Little Q&A. I actually have two book signings scheduled and working on a third one.
One's on the east side, right?
One's on the east side.
East side of Providence.
East side
that's
of
for
Providence.
People who aren't from around here.
East side of Providence. I got another one that's going to be down in Coventry,
mm-hmm.
And then working on a third one in Barrington.
Oh wow!
On the East Bay.
All right.
So there you go.
And I must say, shout out to our boy, who never goes to class, Derek in Arizona.
That's right. Yeah,
who wrote
that was very nice.
Very
of him to
well
do that
done.
Today. Yeah, that was nice.
And you contributed to it, obviously.
I did.
And another Q&A. A spirited and excellent case to be made for John Rook to take over for Gil Santos as the official play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. I wholeheartedly second it. Anybody who hasn't seen it, go to my Twitter account. You can find the link there, or go to Derek's.
It's at Derek Havens.
It's Patriots Haven.
Patriots Haven. That's
or
right.
You can check out.
Or just go
I retweeted him, so
yeah,
you can look
go to,
online.
Go to PatsFans.com, right?
Yeah, it's somewhere on there. We had the link provided in there, though.
Right.
So
okay,
but go and read it, forward it, do whatever you can. Let's get this. Let's make this happen for at JRook0722, which we need to change.
We will change
way.
That. I've got to come up with a good name. Though. That was very nice of Derek to say that. I think most everybody realizes that, you know, that's a change that's going to happen. I'd be lying if I said I didn't want the opportunity. Gil, as you know, has been a dear friend for a number of years, but more than that, he's been a mentor to me for a number of years. When I was doing BC football, back when I was doing actually Brown football, and then back in my early days of doing the Providence College Friars basketball games, you know, every once in a while, whenever I'd run into Gil here at the stadium or just, you know, covering games or whatever, he would offer a kind word, and he would offer not only a little bit of advice, but he'd say, hey, I thought you did a really good job of painting the picture today. Or yesterday, or I caught a little bit of your game. You got great energy. He says, I love listening to you guys. And so it was always nice of him. So we stayed in touch over the years. And obviously, as I became a member of the organization here 20 years ago, you know, I thought it was, you know, and Gil had just rejoined the team as the play-by-play voice, about the time that I had, actually, I think a year or two before. But, we've been friendly. And obviously his illness this last year hit a lot of us hard. I was kind of always caught between a rock and a hard place over, you know, trying to give him his privacy and respect his family's privacy during a very difficult time, over just trying to find out how he is, you know? Wanted to try to find out, you know, geez, you okay? You know, what can I do to help? Because he's always been that kind of a friend to me. And so if I ever have the opportunity to do it, and, you know, obviously the decision is going to be made by people other than myself, then I would consider it probably one of the greatest days of my professional life, certainly.
I would encourage anybody who's listening right now or potentially listening via podcast later to do whatever you can to influence those people above us who are making those decisions to make the right and only logical decision.
Well, that's very nice
to hire you. As
very
that.
Nice of you to say. And guess who's on the phone line? Why aren't you in class, Derek?
Well, you know, like Eric said, I never go. So
okay.
You know,
all right.
I have to give you a pat on the back and take a shot. I wouldn't expect anything less from you.
Of course.
Very, very, very true. Very true. Hey, man, thank you very much for the nice article today. It was very kind of you to do that.
No problem at all. I mean, you know, you guys already kind of passed along that information. It was really my pleasure to do it because it's really the only sensible and, you know, logical choice in my mind. And it seems to get a lot of great feedback so far. So that's obviously really exciting. It's on the front page right now on PatsFans.com. Along with a lot of other great stuff going on. And like Eric said, it's on his Twitter page. It's on our friend Russell Baxter's. It's on mine. You can find the link somewhere.
Hey, yeah, enough with the horn. We need to make this happen. Come on, Kev.
Yeah, we do. It needs to happen. It needs to happen.
Well,
I completely agree.
I would tell you that, first of all, thank you. Second of all, they're very, very large shoes to fill. But I would also be lying if I didn't think I could handle them. And I certainly believe that I can.
Oh, yes, you can.
Absolutely. Well, it's just, you know, you want to make certain that franchises, teams, families, organizations such as this one are set up properly, that are, they're nurtured, they're cared for. I mean, we're so lucky here. To have had the experiences that we've had, you know, in a personal and professional sense over the course of the last 20 years or so, you know, largely coinciding, I think, with really, to be honest with you, since James Bush Orthwine took the team over and then the Crafts took it over from him, because that sort of set the ship right from the, you know, hey, we love them, but they're terrible Billy Sullivan days, with the exception, of course, of one notable 1985 year. And then to the Victor Kiam, oh, what a mistake days. Mm. You know, that's what kind of set us up to where we are now. And, of course, now the Patriots are thought of as one of the preeminent sports franchises on the planet.
And let's not forget, we almost lost this team when Orthwine took over.
We did.
They almost became the St. Louis Mustangs.
The St. Louis whatever. Yeah.
Mustangs, I believe.
Is that what they were going to call
there's
them?
There's a hat. It's hidden. I think it's on the I think Hold on. I think it's on the third floor of the hall at Patriot Place.
Really?
It's hidden way in the back in a display of Patriots history.
Really?
There's a hat. You know one of those old, like, shark tooth hats that they used to have?
Yeah.
I believe it was around that time. They made a demo hat, like a prototype hat, with the logo of the St. Louis franchise that this would have become.
Come on.
Had it moved. And I believe they were going to be called the Mustangs. It was purple and gold. It would have been like Laker colors. And they would have been in St. Louis.
That's like Viking colors.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah. And there's a hat, an actual hat of the St. Louis Mustangs in the hall at Patriot Place. You can go and see it, but it's not on, you know, major display. You have to go and look for it. But it's in there.
Wow.
And that's part of the team's history.
I guess that's something.
They were that close.
That's something that has avoided me. I should have seen that. I would like to. I'm going to have to go in there and check that out now.
And say, and you know, give thanks for the fact that it didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
You get to actually get a little glimpse of what would have been in Bizarro World if they had if Orthwine had actually followed through on his threats.
That's a little scary. That's a little scary. So Big D, what's happening with you? Well, you know, you're getting ready for finals here shortly, aren't you?
Yep. About that time.
Your eighth year doing finals. I mean, that must be.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, with this much experience.
You and Bluto. You know,
it's so easy now, you know. It's second nature. But you know what? Happy belated Thanksgiving to both of you.
You
thanks,
too, Derek.
Thanks, buddy.
Booth,
so yeah, absolutely.
Hope you guys had a good time. Certainly made Thanksgiving night, you know, pretty interesting with that victory. I don't think anybody saw that kind of the second quarter coming. What did you guys think about the win in general, though?
Well, clearly, I just thought it was a comedy of errors that actually played in New England's favor. I've never seen in more than 30 years of covering pro football or covering any football, I've never seen back-to-back fumble returns for touchdowns on consecutive plays. Never, ever.
It was incredible.
That to me was as wild a sequence as I have ever seen on a football field. And I've talked to a lot of people that have watched a lot of football since last Thursday. And I can honestly say no one has ever seen back-to-back fumble returns for touchdowns. They've seen back-to-back interceptions. That's happened on consecutive plays. But fumble returns, especially one coming off of a kickoff, no. Nobody's seen that. That was nutty. And, you know, the look on Rex Ryan's face was absolutely priceless. I mean, if we could just take that and freeze frame it and throw it up on the big screen here at Gillette, the next time the Jets come would be just out of this world, because I think we all realize it could have happened to a better franchise. But, you know, it's just because it's rivalry. And the fact remains is that if the Patriots were going through what the Jets are going through, and thank goodness they're not, but if they were, I'd expect the Jets to do the same thing. That's what I love about New England versus New York. It's a rivalry that will sustain itself for the ages, whether it's Patriots-Jets or Patriots-Giants or Red Sox-Yankees. It's just going to sustain itself because of the very nature of these two cities that are only separated by a mere 3.5 to 4 hours. And it's there's a great rivalry here, and I love every stinking bit of it, whether it's good or bad. I think it's great. I love needling them, and I know they love needling us.
I always get the feeling that it's a rivalry like a sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
Like New York is the older brother.
Yes.
Boston is the younger brother.
Great analogy.
Who's finally grown up and gotten to a point where he has some respect.
And not only has some respect, but he can whip the bigger brother or older brother.
Yeah, exactly.
From time to time.
Right.
And that's exactly a microcosm of what happened in my own personal family.
Well, were you the older or the younger?
I'm the older brother. It's true.
Really?
It's absolutely true. My younger brother got a little bit bigger than me, and then when were teenagers.
And he kicks your ass now.
And when we were teenagers, I was like, I can't hit him as hard anymore.
How much younger is he?
He's 3 years younger than me.
Wow.
So he's, what, well, he's 50 now. So, but I'm just saying that, you know, when we were
53?
Kids. Yes, I am.
Damn good for your age, man.
Thank you. I stay in good shape. I work out, man. Come on. What the hell?
Well, I mean, like Paul is 10 years older than he is.
I can keep up with my boy, Derek. That's all. I just keep up with you.
I didn't say I could get by you.
I just said I could keep up with you. It's all good.
But you know what? We need to talk about your Twitter handle.
I know.
We got to work on that.
I know.
Now, I have a good suggestion, and if you like it, you know, I don't know. I kind of like, I was thinking about Patriot's voice.
Okay.
I kind of like that one. But that one's taken. But any Patriots voice is available. And
you know,
I saved it in case you want it.
How about just JR?
JR works too, short and sweet.
Yeah, but I'm going to look it up. You think that one? That one's still around?
I'm going to look it up right now.
You know, TV show Dallas.
Yeah, well, JR Ewing passed away last week. You remember? You know that, right? Larry Hagman died last week.
I actually missed that.
You missed that? Yeah.
I did miss that.
Larry Hagman.
When was that?
Last
On Thanksgiving?
I think Friday. I think the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's why I missed that. I was totally out of it.
It was only a couple days ago.
Yeah, it was only a few days
really?
Ago. Yeah, Friday or Saturday. But yeah, Larry Hagman passed away.
Wow.
He's 81.
And he was doing the new Dallas.
He was on the new Dallas show as the old J.R. Ewing.
As the old J.R. Ewing,
yeah.
Right?
Of course, that's how I got my nickname J.R., was from the Dallas show. And so
Also your initials.
Well, yes, they are. But I mean, that people started calling me JR because of the old 1980s TV show Dallas with JR
right.
Ewing.
You know what? Punch up your Twitter account I'll search for JR.
We're going to do all this. Yeah, this is good stuff, right? Or are we going to wait?
What
are we
going to
do?
All right, I'll take it from there.
All right, there you go. You find it there. All right. It's not available.
JR is not available.
JR is not available. All right, well, you're going to have to come up with something that's good then.
We'll have to brainstorm. Everyone on the show needs to brainstorm, too, because I now have the 0722 memorized, but it took a few times.
I know, that's probably, it is probably
All right, Derek, try this one. JR_UT.
JRUT?
University of Texas.
_UT?
Yeah.
That one's available.
What do you think?
Maybe.
Short and sweet?
Maybe.
You like the underscore.
Just
well, I don't like it. I mean, it's just it's necessary if you want it to be obvious that there's a separation.
A separation, right?
You know,
instead of J.
And
Rutt.
Instead of J. Rutt doesn't sound good. You know,
that's probably true.
Or you know, J. R. Longhorn.
J. R. Longhorn.
It's a little long.
Yeah, but you know what though? That kind of like
pigeonholes you.
Yeah, pigeonholes me. Got to come up with something better.
Well, it's something for the rest of the listeners and you to think about. We'll have to get that figured out.
We'll get right.
I think we're onto something though. I think we're onto something with the JR though. I think we need to keep it short.
Yeah, that's probably
JR. Something around JR needs to stay.
Okay. All right.
How's that?
Okay, that works. We'll work on that. I'll consider some nominations. How's that?
All right.
Come up with something as long as the JR is in there somewhere.
Yes, as long as JR is in there and it's not, too long a handle.
Not more than like 7 or 8.
Not more
letters,
than
right?
Yeah, exactly.
7 to 8.
Seven
to
eight characters is enough.
Isn't that premium? I don't know. I don't know the Twitter rules. What are the Twitter rules, Derek? You know.
The shorter the better, because then when you retweet somebody, you have more space to write comments.
Right.
In there.
Right. That seems to
plus
count,
it's easier
right?
to remember.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true.
Yeah, I like to avoid numbers and underscores as simple as possible, so people can make sure they get the handle right when they're looking you up.
I have learned that it is better to try to avoid numbers just because when I first opened up my Twitter account a few years ago, I looked for my name and then I looked for, just the J. Rook and they were both taken. And so I put my birthday on the end of it, 0722. That's what I did. That's why I got 0722.
How about J underscore R?
J underscore R.
And there's a separation there. J-R.
J-R. That's not bad.
Try that one, Derek.
That's not available either.
That's not either.
See, somebody's half a step ahead of us going, I'm going to screw these guys.
Right. Someone's got to beat me to the punch right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, one more thing before I'll let you guys go. But,
yep.
So down the stretch here, I mean, I think the win against New York was obviously a good win. I wasn't really, maybe it's stupid to say, but I wasn't really that impressed besides the second quarter. I think they had a good second quarter, but the rest of the game was it was okay, I thought, the team played. I wasn't really excited with the first quarter or really how they finished, but, the game was out of hand, and obviously they did enough to win. They did more than enough to win, and it was an important game, but, going down the stretch here, I'm a little worried about the health isn't too much of a concern because I think guys that are hurt are suspended now, apparently, with these PED things. I mean, they're going to be coming back for the playoffs, but what do you guys think about skipping ahead of Miami, not to look them over, but, I mean, what do you think about the Texans and the 49ers matchup and all that?
That's what I've been saying since the schedule came out. The toughest stretch and the toughest test they're going to have this
coming
year
up.
is here at home in these two games.
Yep.
They have
up.
To get by Miami first. They have to clinch the division. I think because it's a division-clinching game, I really don't think you have anything to worry about. I know Miami's going to be tough. You always historically have a tough time with Miami down in Miami. It's a rookie quarterback. I know they've won against one and
Riding
lost, and they've lost
a good win last week.
Well, yeah, but they also lost to a rookie quarterback this year too. So let's not forget that either. But I think because it's a division clinching game, it's going to be all business. I don't think you're going to have anything to worry about. They'll take care of it there. The real test is going to be the Monday nighter against Houston and then the Sunday nighter against San Francisco.
Well, which do you think is tougher? I mean, more importantly, I mean, I think that the Texans game obviously carries more weight.
No question.
Because of the conference.
Right.
And if you had to split one, obviously you'd want the Texans. You know, you want to beat that, win that and lose to the 49ers.
But yeah, if you had to.
49ers seem like they're the best team in football right now. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
I think they have the best. They might have one of the best defenses in football. I'm not sold on Colin Kaepernick and the
offense.
I'm
still kind of curious as to why they're making this move right now because, you know,
Well, they're not making the move according to Jim Harbaugh. He said Alex Smith is still our starting quarterback.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't know what to believe.
I don't know what to believe with him. It's probably the right move, but I'll be surprised if they don't start Kaepernick.
When they come here, you mean?
Yeah, when they come here.
So Kaepernick's officially taken over in your mind?
In my mind, I think he has. I think they've begun that metamorphosis. I could be wrong, but whatever. I mean, okay. And frankly, I'm not sure that I disagree with it. I liken it a little bit to what we were going through with Drew Bledsoe almost 20 years ago, but here's the thing. Bledsoe was hurt, and of course, Alex Smith is also banged up somewhat. He's got the ribs or whatever. But I don't think that Alex Smith is yet on the downside of his career, nor has he had the upside to his career that Drew Bledsoe clearly had.
No, never. No.
So it's still a little bit of a, well, he's playing well. Why mess up with a good thing? Because to me, that was a lot of the anti-Brady sentiment, as I recall, back during that time frame, was because, well, Drew Bledsoe wasn't stinking.
Yeah.
So why are we doing this now just because Bledsoe's hurt?
Here's the problem I have with these two games. I think both defenses have the ability to neutralize New England's offense. And if that's the case, because they have competent offenses, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even I'm probably even underselling their offenses by saying they're competent.
Sure. Yep.
I think both of these games could be losses for New England. And I'd be more surprised if they split these games than if they lose both.
I think they'll split. I do believe they'll split.
And I'll be stunned if they win both.
And I think I'll be mildly surprised if they win both. But you'll recall at the halfway point, Eric, I said 7-1, and that one of the losses is going to come to one of those teams. I'm going to stick by that.
The only thing I think it plays in New England's favor with the Houston game is that it's the third road game in a row for Houston.
Right.
And that's a tough spot for any NFL team historically.
And their front seven is pretty depleted right now.
Quite frankly, I think that's the one they win.
Yeah.
And it's and like we said, it's the more important one to win as far as the playoff seeding goes.
It is.
But I don't feel good about either one of those games. Even though they're at home, even though they're at
team has scored 108 points in the last 2 weeks.
They haven't done it against good defenses.
Doesn't matter.
Yes, it does matter.
Oh, come on,
It
Eric.
Does matter because these are the
They've
teams you're going to face in the playoffs.
They've never scored 108 points in 2 weeks in franchise history, ever. It doesn't matter what kind of defenses they're coming against.
I think they're only 93 points away, if I remember something that our friend Russell Beck tweeted out, 93 points away from 500, which means they'd be the first franchise to cross the 500 point mark for a season 4 times.
That's correct.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, for the 49ers game, the matchup to me becomes the Smith brothers, not really brothers, but, you know,
yeah, I know what you mean.
And all this
going
against our offensive line, because that seems to be where, all games are won and lost with them. I mean, especially when they take over, and Alden Smith's been on an incredible tear, lately. So that will be the biggest thing, because I'm not sure San Francisco can score enough to keep up with us, but they have the defense to kind of keep you down.
Yeah.
So if they're not getting pressure on Brady, I think their secondary is certainly made. They look a lot better because of their front seven. And if you can kind of neutralize that front seven at least a little bit, I think you can put up some points on San Francisco. So I think both of these games are going to be really good measuring stick games that tell us a lot about the team. Because right now you're really not sure exactly where they are. You have an idea, but I mean, it's amazing. We're this far into the season, we're still not 100% sure where we're at.
But that's the beauty of it. Honestly, right. I mean, we'd all love to know where we are, but see, the nature of the game nowadays is that, you know, because every team has to overcome adversity with injuries and the suspensions and everything that's gone on, being in position to still be competitive and play at a superior level is the challenge. And now this should shed some light as to why Bill Belichick and why, all the powers that be around here and why the coaches coach, why they do the things they do, because they feel they have been around around long enough to expect these things will happen. And if they don't happen, it's a bonus. But when they do happen, guess who's ready to battle it? And I think the Patriots are about as ready as anybody. And I will admit that the Jermaine Cunningham suspension for the PED thing that came about yesterday, that does concern me a little bit, not knowing what Chandler Jones's status is going to be for this week. That does concern me. And right. Bill said earlier today, in fact, for those that haven't had a chance to read the transcript or listen to it here on the website, that they're going to look at all options, which would apparently include taking a look at outside and bringing somebody else in.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to at some point, because Trevor Scott is not. I mean, he's been. Okay.
I like him. I like
pretty good at him this week.
But. I like Scott. I actually think he's pretty active, and I've always wondered why Jake Beckett hasn't really had, the reins taken off of him, and I can only assume it's because it has something to do with his level of practice or preparation or in getting something. But figuring out a way to get him more of a consistent mix in there, I mean, I would think this would be his opportunity.
I would,
or maybe,
yeah, I'd like to see him get some chances because he can get to the quarterback.
Sure he can.
He's proven
that. He did
that
in Arkansas. We saw that in college.
I think the concern might be that that's all he can do.
Yeah.
And that they don't like that they're...
They like versatility in their players. Yes.
But
yes, that's true.
If they're down a guy or two, you still need to get to the quarterback. So I'd rather have at least a guy who can do that and has proven he can do that. Because you need that. You're missing that.
Right, right.
So I'd like for them to give him a chance.
I think they go from 4-3 to 3-4 this week, and that's
because possible.
Of personnel. I mean, I think when you look at who's healthy along that line, you could easily go, Love and Will Fork and, either Dedrick or whoever they want to throw in at another 5-tech DE spot, and then you could have Mayo or Spikes and Hightower and Ninkovich, as your four linebackers.
Yeah, it's easier to do that with Ninkovich because he can so easily go from his hand on the ground to standing up,
and
moving from there. So, yeah, it's possible. It's possible they could do that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just a thought. But I don't want to clog up the air with anymore. I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to talk. So I will talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, Big D.
Glad you enjoyed the article. And, happy Thanksgiving again to you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, Derek.
Derek at the University of Arizona. And, again, if you want to follow him, his Twitter handle is @PatriotsHaven. And then, of course, you can go to PatsFans.com to read his posts. It really is a very, very good website in terms of Patriots fans interaction. I know a lot of our listeners probably are a part of it, maybe even frequent posters, but they also offer up some pretty good articles. So, not the least of which is the one that he wrote about me today, but that was very, very nice of him to do that. So thank you very much.
Might have been his best work ever.
Well, hey, you never know. Sometimes you got to suck up to get up. He's a good kid. Appreciate
that. We kid because we care.
Yes, there's no question about that. Back to the phones. Here's our buddy Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Hey, Al. What's up, man?
Fellas, how you doing?
We're good.
What's up, Al?
Hey, I have been watching the Patriots since 1966. I don't recall 3 touchdowns in less than 60 seconds of play.
Yeah, I know.
Ever by the Patriots.
It was huge. We were all standing, and I'm sure Eric's sitting, and we're watching this, and it's kind of like, did that just happen?
Yeah, it was. The whole press box at MetLife was just in hysterics.
What the hell did we just see?
Well, because it started with the laughable non-coverage of Shane Vereen on that long touchdown.
That was unbelievable.
Yep. That started it.
I've never seen anybody as wide open on a sideline wheel route as that.
But we've seen plays like that before where there's a busted coverage, a guy gets uncovered. You've seen that before.
Wow.
So you can at least say, well, okay, Jets had a...
Bart Scott just didn't get out there.
Right. That in and of itself...
He couldn't wait.
...wasn't that surprising. It was an amazing play. And you could tell because he was running towards us from where we were sitting.
To give Brady credit, critical of Tom Brady for things from time to time, he put that ball right in stride.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a great throw.
Vereen did not have to break. He didn't have to break even half a stride.
No.
And he was gone.
No.
And so, sure, he beats Bart Scott by himself, but he beat the other guys because the pass was on the money.
Yep. And so that, alone was a great play. But then they follow it up with, two plays later? 3 plays later when Sanchez falls, fumbles, and then the kickoff right after that. I mean, it was just
pretty amazing.
The game ended.
That Mark Sanchez moment reminded me of, you have to go back to the New York Titans They should have had their New York Titans.
Oh, those are hideous. No, those are hideous. I hate those.
Okay.
Those are hideous.
That was where Lee Grosskopf bumped into Bob Myshak, dropping the ball. And
Lee Grosskopf. Oh, my God. You are going way back.
He missed the handoff to Bill Mathis. You know, Bill Mathis was in the backfield, missed the handoff. Then he bumps into Bob Myshak. The ball's on the ground. And there's Ross O'Hanley picking it up for the Patriots.
He's throwing names around like we know who he's talking about.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
You got to go back to see a highlight like that.
That game ended, though, in that sequence. Those 52 seconds. The game ended. The Jets.
The Edelman play was like frosting on the
cake.
Yeah. But
yeah.
To me, the game was over on that fumble.
It was. It was epitomized by the Sanchez play, but it ended completely on the Edelman play.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That you could tell from the crowd. You could tell from Rex Ryan's face. You could tell from the Jets players.
Oh.
The New England sideline erupted. The game
They even lost
ended.
Fireman Ed.
He left it halftime.
By the way, what are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on that? Because I know a lot of people have made fun on that, and it's been going around. It's made the national media, which is strange in itself. We're talking about a guy who's nothing but a fan, who's really nothing more than a glorified, Pat Patriot with the big head. Except he gets out there and he leads the JETS chant. And I got to tell you, I'm a little sad. Because that was part of the fun of making fun of the Jets.
Yeah,
I agree. It's hard for me. Listen, even though he's a fan of the wrong team, so to speak, I never hate on another fan.
No, okay? I agree with you. Now, that's a good point, Al. That's a good point.
He's a fan of his team, yep. Just like I'm a fan of my team.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And I don't hate on Fireman Ed. And besides, firemen are all great people. We love our firemen. We should.
Totally agree with you. Well said. There you go.
And there you go. And so, look, but evidently he's just had enough. He's just seen it.
Well, what kills me, though, is that he said now that he was giving it up because he got tired of taking the crap from the fans that sit around him because of his support for Mark Sanchez.
For Sanchez, okay. Well, you never know what the real reason is, but obviously he's a big-time Jets fan, and for whatever reason, he just had seen enough that night or had taken enough or whatever. But you know what? I hope he comes back because I like seeing him out there. I really do. I hope he doesn't.
I got a very simple solution. Go back to wearing the number 42 jersey.
He's not quitting the team. He's going to every game.
He's still going to go.
He's not
going to
be
Fireman Ed.
I thought he was
not
going to
be
the
No. He's not going to lead the cheers. He's still going to show. But something tells me if he shows up in a different jersey number or goes, as a fan or whatever, people are still going to egg him on.
Yeah, they might.
You just know it. He's going to have to switch his seat or something because people are going to egg the guy on.
Well, believe it or not, fellas, I'm actually got tickets to see the Jets in Jacksonville in 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay. Well, then maybe you need to take over for Fireman Ed.
That's right. I'll get my. No, but whenever
he's going to do a Jags chant, Jags, 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 Jags.
When the Pats are playing on a Monday or a Sunday or one of these specialty games, Thanksgiving, if there's not a conflict, I don't mind going to the Jaguars games at all. First of all, it's pretty easy to get a ticket. And second of all, it is the NFL, So, I'll go there to, boo the Jets. I don't know. But it's the NFL. I will definitely go. I've got tickets to go in two weeks. And I did go to the game Sunday against the Tennessee Titans as well. They've got a great situation there in Jacksonville. They've got a lot of great fans. They just don't have enough fans, I guess. Maybe they're going to lose their team. I hope not.
Right.
But the people that go are great, and they have a good time, and it's a family thing. There's not a lot of drunken fights or whatever. It's a good thing. I hope they get to keep the team. But anyway, listen, speaking of crowds and stuff like that, we got the Dolphins coming up this week.
Yes, sir.
In Miami.
Yes,
how many
sir.
People are you think going to be Patriots fans at that game?
It's usually 50-50.
Yeah, there's a lot of Pats fans that go down to this thing.
Yeah.
They're having trouble with their attendance in Miami, too, if you've noticed.
Yeah, no, historically, New England sells very well in Miami. Fans travel very well. It's a 50-50 split a lot of times.
There you go. If you want to talk about teams in Florida that might end up in L.A.
Miami's not moving. Miami's not going anywhere.
The port for that team is a mile wide and an inch thick. They do not have the kind of support. They've got the history. They got Don Shula.
They're not
all
going
this.
Anywhere.
But the South Beach, that's always a good thing to go on a road trip.
Right, especially that's a huge Super Bowl venue.
You can't claim that they're putting the meat in the seats because they're not.
No, I'm not. I'm not claiming that. I'm claiming that they're not going anywhere.
Well,
that's all I'm saying. They're not moving.
I agree. It's unfortunate because if that were the standard of not putting the meat in the seats, then they would be eligible to go somewhere. But evidently they have other factors going in their favor, which is, you know, la-di-da. But anyway, that's, to me, this game coming up, it should be, you know, hopefully it's not a trap game for the Patriots, because I agree with Derek. I think the next two games after that are very important, and certainly the Houston game would be more important than San Francisco. If you had to pick one to get beat, I think we're going to win them both. But, you know, if we had to pick one to get beat in, I guess it would be the San Francisco game.
Yeah, well, obviously, because that game means very little in terms of conference tiebreakers, but
right.
I think, you know, it's still going to be very difficult. Baltimore is hanging in there. I really thought Baltimore was going to stub their toe this week, and obviously it took them overtime to get by San Diego.
But I
think the Patriots have to look at it now, Al, as winning out if they really want a shot at winning one of the two top spots.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you're right. We're in that position now. I mean, Baltimore played a horrible game at Kansas City, somehow won. It played a horrible game at San Diego, somehow won that. The Texans have played two pretty average games in a row, have managed to win those. I mean,
if it'd be nice
to catch a break every now and again, but we're just not, you can't depend on that.
Al, for you and the rest of the fans out there listening, I think you should mentally, psychologically prepare yourself for a wild card weekend game involving your Patriots. No, I'm serious. I'm not being flip. I think you should prepare yourself for that eventuality. And if you get a bye, hey, pleasant surprise. You should expect to be playing on wild card weekend, hosting a game.
It would be almost easier to nose out Houston than it would be Baltimore at this point, because at least we got a game with Houston, where if they lost one more game, we'd get the tiebreaker with Houston.
Well, but you could hope for
it's going to be hard because they've got the tiebreaker with us.
Well, unless you get a three-way tie. When you get a three-way tie, because then, as Paul was explaining on PFW, they cancel each other out because we will have lost, assuming we win Houston, we will have beaten Houston. Houston will, I think, have beaten Baltimore, but Baltimore will have beaten New England. So those head-to-heads will cancel each other out, yes. If
so
we beat Houston.
So does it go to division record now?
Then it goes to common
conference.
Opponents.
Common opponents, okay.
Opponents and then conference if they're still tied. But common opponents would be next. So your best hope would be for a three-way tie with the records.
Because I think the Patriots then would be in pretty good shape.
Yes, they would.
Okay.
So you want, I think, if all three of these teams could finish 13-3.
New England has to win out. That's imperative.
But if these three teams finish 13-3, I think the Patriots have a good shot at being one of
those
two.
New England's only two of New England's three losses will be to NFC teams.
NFC teams. So you'd have one loss in the conference.
Gotcha.
So they'll have one loss in the conference, but you'll also have to look at the common opponents matchup and see where they are there, because that's the first tiebreaker.
Right.
Presumably they wouldn't have any NFC common opponents, if I'm correct in assuming that, if you're in different divisions.
You
play different divisions.
Yeah,
than the other
conference. So you're going to look.
You're looking mostly at the AFC.
You're looking mostly at the AFC, and right now the Patriots have one loss.
So right now you should go and look at the schedules for Baltimore and Houston. And I'm serious, and see who they're playing, because that's your best hope right now.
And report back to us. You can report back to us.
But I still think you should. I still think you should prepare yourself for a wild card weekend hosted game.
Well, I'll do the best I can. Thanks for clearing that up. Now I have one more point, and I'll let you go.
Go.
My question is this: when is the Bolden kid coming back? Do we know?
Yes, after
next
Monday
week, right? Next Monday.
He's got one more week then to miss.
Correct. He's not going to be here for the Miami game. He'll be here starting.
But he'll be here for the next two, the two big games.
Yes, he will. Correct.
Very good. I like our stable of running backs, and I know that there's a lot of debate about, you know, do you want to have the feature back or do you want to have the stable of running backs? And you know, it wasn't Corey Dillon. Cool to have, and yes, he was. And you know, it'd be great, I guess, if you had a Corey Dillon, you'd love to have one as your feature back every down. But I mean, to me, the NFL it's different now. I don't think you really have that feature back anymore, for the most part. There's exceptions to that, but I think most of the time, if you're playing on artificial turf, particularly, you know, you want to have that stable of quick-footed backs back there. And I like the fact that I think that Ridley is becoming more and more fumble-proof. I think we have to worry less and less about him fumbling in recent weeks. Obviously, Woodhead pitches in from time to time, and if we can get Bolden back, he is definitely fumble-proof. if we could get him back, that would be good. And you know, obviously Vereen is coming on, so I like our running backs. And if we, the more we can mix them up in there and give them all a few touches a game, maybe with Ridley being kind of the first among equals, I guess you might say, more the first down and 10 running back. If you've got a running back on first and 10, a lot of times they don't, of course, in the spread or whatever. But I like our running backs, especially with the Bolden kid coming back. And one thing about it, he's not coming back from an injury.
Technically, he is. He had a knee injury before he got the suspension.
Oh, okay. Well, then, do we know anything about the status of his injury then?
No, because he hasn't been allowed to be here for 4 weeks.
When you're not allowed to be here, you're not allowed to be here.
You're persona non grata for four weeks.
Hopefully, we assume he's been working out on his own. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that's right. And rehabbing on his own.
Right.
And rehabbing on his own. And we'll find out how he's been doing with that, I guess, when he shows up again.
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, when
they have practice, yeah.
Well, I hope he's been working out, because I think we're going to need him. I think we're going to need everybody here for these two big games in December. Maybe we might get a weather break in the San Francisco game too. You know, it's far enough into December that you might get that blanket of snow or whatever. And you know, we're always pretty good
for Houston too. That's December 10th.
In bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that could help us in both of those games. But I think we're going to win them both. I really do. We might lose another game. So we might lose down here in Jacksonville before Christmas. Everybody's, you know,
I ain't buying
doing
that
shopping
one.
Or whatever.
No, I'm not buying that one. Sorry.
All right, fellas. Take care.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it. You got it. Alan Valdosta, Georgia. Very quickly before we get to, Kev, we'll take a break here. Jamie, says, John, two questions regarding the Patriots. First, what is the status of Jones? Secondly, what if Jones is still hurt and Cunningham is suspended? Yeah. Who is the next player up? That's been the huge
Most
topic.
Most likely Trevor Scott.
Yeah, right.
Which I'm not excited about, but he has been getting more playing time of late. He's the next logical one. You have two rookies, Francis and Beckett, who, well, you would assume would have to step up and fill that void. They're already on their 53, so right. It's not like you have to make any moves to activate them.
No.
But, also, it's not like Cunningham was this, all-pro on the line there. He was a role-playing guy. So you can make up the difference, I think, without too much trouble. That's one silver lining there, that it's not, you know, that's not like Jones, for instance. Then I'd be a little more concerned if it were Jones who were going to be out for a month.
Right.
We'll know more about his injury tomorrow, whether or not he practices. So just have to wait and be patient.
Keep your fingers crossed. All right. So today, of course, you know, we're nitpicking again over the Jets win from Thursday night. If there were some things about the game that you liked, you disliked, it is time to pick the carcass clean of that turkey, so to speak.
By the way,
did you see the medical report out today from the Mayo Clinic that says that you really should only do leftovers for 4 days after the main meal?
Any leftovers or just thanks or,
four
or
days.
Turkey?
Turkey. 4 days.
Okay.
Today is day five.
Because it goes bad or whatever?
It's just for health reasons.
Yeah.
That's the optimum health. You know, it doesn't mean you can't eat it if still in there and it's well preserved and you got it refrigerated and all that stuff.
But chances are.
They're just saying 4 days is the optimum time that you should really have any leftover in the fridge.
I only had leftover turkey for 2 days after Thanksgiving.
I've still got some.
You do?
But I think it's going to take a hike tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I've eaten a lot.
Yeah.
Ton of it. My kids don't like it as much. My girlfriend, but I like turkey sandwiches. But the reason that the rest of my turkey, and I've only got probably a couple of sandwiches worth left, but the reason the rest of mine's going is because I ran out of stuffing.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, I got to have the stuffing with the turkey on the sand, right?
Yeah.
What about some cranberry sauce?
Little cranberry, and just a smidge of gravy with it,
not,
too.
Not if you're Paul Perillo, though.
Yeah. He doesn't like the cranberry sauce?
He raised hell with
you got to have a little bit of the sweet stuff in there, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea. Good call.
Mm-hmm.
Attaboy, Kev.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can come over and clean up my fridge later tonight. 508-298.
I'll be there. I'm always scrounging.
Wash his car while you're at it, too.
508-298.
As long as he doesn't yell at me like those poor hospital people, we'll be all right.
Yes. Do not go to Rhode Island Hospital. Money grubbing sons of blackety blank.
Well, my nitpick real quick before I let you go, because then I got to go back upstairs.
Okay, fine.
Keeping the starters in far too long in a blowout. I don't like it.
Yeah, well, that's what we argued about for one day anyway last week concerning Rob Gronkowski.
I don't like it, and I wrote an entire commentary about it for this week's PFW, the one that's going to come out after the Miami game.
Okay.
About this subject because, A, two things. One, when your backups are in and you're still scoring, the opponent has no one to blame but themselves. They're that bad, they're letting your backups score on you. You have nothing to complain about. If you're still scoring with your starters in there in the fourth quarter, now you look like a bad loser because you're running up the score. And you're getting the other team motivated to try to give a little extra nudge or a shove or a little harder hit than they might normally do to guys like, oh, I don't know, Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And you're risking him for no good reason. And Bill has gotten away with this far too many times already this season and in past seasons, playing Brady into the fourth quarter, and not just having Brady hand off. Brady is throwing the football in the fourth quarter.
Right.
If you're going to be doing that, give those reps to Ryan Mallett, who needs the experience. And at least you can say, hey, it's our backup quarterback. We have a reason for him to throw the ball. We don't know what we have in him. When Brady's in there throwing the ball, you look like a sore winner, like you're running up the score, and you're risking injury unnecessarily to him. That's my nitpick for the game on there. He should have been pulled the end of the
Everyone
third quarter
sucks but me.
Actually, I think that's a pretty good nitpick. That was my nitpick from a couple of weeks ago. You know, I mean, I realize that, you know, regulars are all supposed to play special teams, but I just think you have to have somebody that's, you know, controlling the quality and the repetition of your main guys.
And your main guys, when you're in a blowout, I'm not talking about in a close game, whatever, like because Gronkowski having to play special teams, I have no problem with that whatsoever. But in a blowout, you're up by five touchdowns. Your best players should not be on the field for
any reason at all. I agree.
And you're going to risk things like what happened to Gronk happening to them. Not all players are equal.
That's right.
Talent-wise. They're all important, but they're not all equal.
Well, the Patriots.
That's why you pay certain guys more than others.
Patriots are a great example of that because they clearly have, you know, the hierarchy, and they have, and the Patriots have made this franchise what it is based on that second tier guy.
Yeah, you have plenty of second tier guys who can be playing the end blocker on the PAT team in a fourth quarter blowout.
Agreed.
You don't need your starting tight end to do it.
Absolutely agreed. Could not agree more. It's just unfortunate. I think that's a real shortcoming of this coaching staff and some of the people that are making the decisions. Yeah. I think that's a shortcoming. It's kind of like, football players play football. I agree with that philosophy.
Yeah.
That's not what we're saying. But when you have the chance to look into it a little bit further, anytime you have the chance, you really need to do that. Why else are we playing an entire friggin' preseason in August, which we know, with the exception of basically one game, is worthless? And we prove it's worthless every year because the regulars don't play. So why is the regular season in a five-touchdown blowout any different?
Exactly. That's my nitpick for this week.
That's a good nitpick,
Thank
Eric.
You
well contributing here for the one time that you actually get to sit down on a Nitpick Tuesday.
I know.
At least you brought something to the table today. I appreciate that.
I just finished writing that whole in 1,000 words yesterday.
So is there anything to report otherwise team-wise today?
Well, yes, somewhat. Okay. We already talked about Cunningham.
Yep.
But rumors that they're already thin at wide receiver, too, because of Branch's injury and having to cut him, Edelman getting hurt against the Jets, and Greg Salas, who was cut and then picked up by the Eagles.
Yeah, right.
They need some wide receiver depth. According to his Twitter account, Jeremy Ebert, the seventh-round pick from this past year, is re-signing with the team. So that's the only actual news that we were able to fish out today.
Okay.
But again, not confirmed by the team. I'm sure that'll be confirmed within 24 hours.
Would make sense since he has some familiarity here. Now, wasn't another expat? Well, obviously Deion Branch was let go, and
Jabari Gaffney.
That's who I was thinking of.
He's serving a suspension right now. Gaffney. He has a 2-game suspension. I forgot exactly what for, but it's 2 games, so he really would be helpless to them right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right, fair enough. Thanks for the update, kid.
All right, bro. I will see you tomorrow. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
And
not so fast.
What? Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes,
and gather
around the fire for Eric Scalavino's word of the day.
Did we catch you by surprise?
No, you did not. No, you did not.
You're prepared today?
I'm always prepared. When have I not prepared for the word of the day,
That's
John?
Very true.
I will. You know what? Since I wasn't on the show last week, I'll give you two words of the day for the price of one.
Can we play the open twice?
How about
then?
That? No, that's okay. No, you don't have to do that. Much as we love Shuler, you don't have to do it twice.
By the way, that suspension looks like it was related to a 2010 arrest he had. I don't know.
Gaffney's?
Yeah, that's all I'm getting on USA Today.
Okay.
And this back from...
it's bizarre.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, he's helpless to New England right
okay.
now.
Okay. All right. Give us a word.
Okay. Given we're extending the little Thanksgiving holiday weekend a little bit, I'm sure a lot of you did some overeating over the past few days.
Yes.
And some of you are trying to work some of that off now, so I'll give you two words.
Okay.
First one, surfeit.
Surfeit?
Surfeit.
S-U-R-F-E-T?
E-I-T.
E-I-T. Oh,
surfeit.
Okay.
Means to indulge, to overindulge, to be gluttonous.
Surfeit.
Surfeit.
Not like surfeit the internet.
No, not surfeit the internet, no. But surfeit, overindulgence. Okay?
Use it in a sentence.
Over Thanksgiving weekend, John Rook was surfeit.
In his what?
In his diet.
Oh, and in my diet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. At the dinner table.
Just kind of into that sentence.
Surfeit at the dinner table.
All right. Okay, surfeit.
Right.
S-U-R-F-E-I-T, to overindulge.
Right.
Okay.
Now, the antonym
yes.
is the other word I'm going to give you today.
Okay.
Abstemious.
Abstemious? Well, that obviously has to mean to
like
do
like abs is an abdominal.
All right. So
abstemious.
Does that mean have anything to do with pushing away from the table?
Everything in moderation. Eating and drinking in moderation.
Abstemious?
Abstemious.
Okay. So I was not very abstemious in my, that's a good word.
In your culinary pursuits.
In my culinary pursuits, yeah.
Over Thanksgiving
right.
weekend.
Right.
As most of the nation was.
In my, okay. In my olfactory preparedness. How's that one?
Olfactory? Your sense of smell?
My sense of smell, yes. I know. That really kind of got me going. There's Big Matt. Hey, Big Matt. What's up?
So there you go. Surfeit, and it's opposite.
Abstemious. A-B-S-T-E-M-I-O-U-S?
You are correct.
Oh, there we go. That's
two
why
for
I,
one.
That's why I was the fourth grade spelling bee champ. I just watched that of Charlie Brown again last night.
Did you really?
Yeah, when he won the spelling bee championship.
Spelling bee?
Yeah, that was cool. I was rooting for Charlie. I was very much like that.
I saw
as
Charlie
a kid.
Brown this weekend.
Come on.
At the Macy's Parade. I went there.
He was there?
He
oh,
was
yeah,
huge
the big
float.
Balloon. The
yep.
big, big,
trying
big
to kick
Charlie.
The football.
Yeah, yeah. Good old
that
Charlie
was fun.
Brown.
That was a check off of the life to-do list.
So you were at the Macy's Parade.
I went to the Macy's Parade.
Very good. I've been three times.
You have?
I've been three times to the Macy's Parade and loved it every time.
It's
even
awesome.
Even though it's old hat for me now, but I took my kids when they were little, and then I went back again a couple of years ago because we were in the preseason NIT during the Thanksgiving holiday a few years back, and always have a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Always have a blast doing it. It is kind of a, it's a little bit of a crowd. It can be crushing.
Sure.
You got to find good places to go so
you don't
get crushed by the crowd.
Yeah.
But there's several great vantage points where the floats come right up to you and you literally can just reach up your hand and touch the balloons.
Yeah,
and,
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I had a great time.
Yeah. Well, good for you. So you got a bucket list thing knocked off.
Yeah, I don't like calling it a bucket list. That phrase irks me.
Well, it was made popular by the movie.
I know, but I don't like it. I like to prefer to call it a life to-do list.
I confront my gloom and doom. I confront it.
Well, that's why I prefer to think of it positive. A bucket list makes it sound like it's a pessimistic thing.
Oh.
Like I'm going to die. I have to do these things. Whereas I look at it,
Eric,
as I'm adding to my life experience.
Eric.
Yeah.
We're all going to die.
Really?
Sorry.
Next, you're going to tell me there's no Santa Claus, John. I'm out of here.
Hour number two of the playbook, 508-298-0398. The Ace Ticket Hotline, webradio at patriots.com. Go.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Oh, yeah, having some fun. Hour number two here inside the Patriots Playbook. On Patriots.com Radio. Gosh, it seems like we haven't been around in a long time. Maybe that's because we haven't been. One show last week, one show the previous week, and then now we're back on a semi-regular schedule this week, although I do have one final college football game on my schedule for this Thursday. I'll be doing the de facto Big East Championship, Rutgers and Louisville.
Then it's John Rook all the time.
You'll have me for the entire month of December. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I know. Just something to get sick of, right, over the course of December. But you could certainly make the argument that the month of December is the most important month for the Patriots, simply because you've got two dynamite opponents that are getting ready to make themselves known here at Gillette Stadium, two of the best teams in football outside of New England, in San Francisco and Houston, respectively. So that is to come in the month of December. Webradio at patriots.com, the email address. That's how you reach us here on the program. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. You can also hit me up on Facebook, John.Rook. R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name. And if you haven't submitted a friend request, go right ahead. I'll be your friend. I'm friends with everybody, or at least I try to be, and then we can post and chat and share Facebook photos and all kinds of neat little stuff. Facebook actually is, it's all right. It works. And then Twitter account, which is what we've been actually taking some nominations for new names, because Derek at Patriots Haven, he's got a good one. And he suggested me coming up with a different one other than my at JRook0722. And again, I explained why I put 0722 in there, because it was my birthday and JRook was taken. But there's a couple of good ones here that I've actually gotten suggestions from on the in the web radio email inbox here. Yeah, a couple of good ones. Couple of good ones. I'm not going to share them because, quite frankly, I don't want anybody to steal them. Well, come on. I know people do that. They just do that just to be, you know, contrarians. So there's a couple of good ones, and I'm going to give a couple of them a try here, and then maybe if not tomorrow, then how about next week when we're back on the regular schedule? Maybe I can debut the new Twitter handle. Who knows? Who knows? All right. So I really liked Eric's nitpick. Not that I don't normally like a lot of stuff that Eric says, because I think most of you who listen to the program realize that, you know, while Eric and I agree about a lot, when we have a chance to debate and argue, we do like to roll up the sleeves and get into it. So we don't agree all the time, which would be boring if we did. But at the same time, his nitpick of, you know, playing regulars way too long, way past the necessary time that they need to be in a game is just spot on. And I'm really glad that, you know, we can take it beyond our conversation here on this program and certainly within the confines of Patriots.com radio and move it to print, too, because a lot of people do read Patriots Football Weekly. A lot of people that probably don't listen to the program or don't tune in on .com radio subscribe to the magazine. And by the way, if you're not subscribing to the magazine, what the heck is wrong with you? Because there's some great stuff in it if you haven't seen it. In fact, we've given away a couple of subscriptions when we played game shows here, you know, on the program, and we'll probably do that if the Patriots get a bye week in the playoffs. You know, so you really need to be rooting for the bye week, because then game show Wednesday or game show Thursday, whichever it comes out to be, it'll make a return appearance for bye week. As if that was the only reason, of course, to root for the bye week. But he's just spot on. I mean, I don't know if that saves us from losing Rob Gronkowski for the next month or so. I don't know if that saves us from, you know, any of the other, you know, short-term or long-term injuries that have transpired over the course of the last few years. But it seems to me just to be a regular course of practice that should be implemented. And there's got to be somebody on that sideline that's in charge of, as I've said, institutional control, where they keep track of, okay, who's out on the field at any given moment. And it's kind of like, all right, well, you know, we're up by 21 points, or we're up by 17, and there's only, you know, 5 minutes left in the game, or, you know, you realize that the game is probably won, or even lost for that matter. Although I don't ever like to give up. I don't care how far I'm behind. I don't ever like to give anything up. And I think that's the mentality with most coaches and players anyway. But if you're way up, as the Patriots have been, especially over the last couple of weeks, why are the regulars still playing? When you don't play them in meaningless preseason games for the very same reason, why is the regular season any different? What could possibly happen when a game is a 4-touchdown difference? That's just, I mean, it's almost too stupid really to comprehend. Anyway, Tim in Baltimore sends this via web radio, and he says, Playbookers, can I play devil's advocate on the issue of leaving in Brady? Can any argument be made that there would be a greater chance of injury to other players if Brady goes out? For example, let's say Mallett comes in, throws a bad pass, that gets one of our receivers blown up. Is that a legitimate argument for leaving our players in that we know will execute plays the best? Well, that's an interesting point, Tim. But I would argue that if a guy like Mallett comes in and throws a bad pass and gets one of the receivers blown up, then we shouldn't have Ryan Mallett in the first place. And that's really a judgment in terms of talent, in terms of evaluation, isn't it? And so you're really committing one mistake before you ever even get to the other one. So if a guy comes in and plays so poorly, why the hell is he even on your roster in the first place? And I would argue that that's more of an egregious error than even leaving them in a meaningless extra point. That's talent evaluation. So I would say I'm not sure that that's an argument that really can be made in this instance, Tim. I see where you're going with it. I just don't know that that would ever enter into the equation. Because when you're in the game, what's the motto? What's the motto that the Patriots have, perhaps above all other teams? And, of course, this has got to be just about every team's motto. Three words I'm looking for. Do your, finish the sentence, job. Do your job. That's what Bill Belichick asks. That's what the players preach. That's what the coaches teach. Do your job. And so when a player is in there, he's expected to do his job. It's that simple. So if you do your job as you are expected to do, then there wouldn't be any chance that a bad pass could get one of the receivers blown up. I mean, we know that players make mistakes. They're always going to. That's the nature of the beast. We're human. It's just the nature of the beast. But the fact remains is that everybody's doing their job as they should be doing it. In other words, with the proper execution in mind, with the proper technique in mind, with the proper schooling and screening and all that stuff. With all this stuff in mind, if you're doing your job to your utmost ability, then you shouldn't be in position to throw a bad pass that gets one of the receivers blown up. That's all I'm saying. Interesting point, Tim, and I thank you for bringing it up because it creates good conversation here. Nathan says, did you hear the catfight on Dennis and Callahan this morning between Shepard and Borges? It was great. I'd be interested to hear comments if you've heard it. No, I did not hear it, Nathan, so perhaps then you can fill me in on what happened. Pete Shepard and I assume that was Ron Borges on their morning radio show here in Boston earlier this morning. A couple of others here. Here comes one. Oh, here's one from Chuck who says, folks, I spent Thursday at the Macy's parade, as did Big Eric. And he says, and since I'm approaching 50, I did not wear a jersey to MetLife. Great day. I'll always remember the day Fireman Ed went looking for a better team. He said, don't get Josh's gadget plays who run end rounds up by 28 when absolutely all the conventional stuff is terrifyingly effective. Late second, first half of the third, he feels the need to get queer about things. You know, that's actually a pretty good nitpick, Chuck. Why, when you're up 28, why are you trying to run an end around? Why are you trying to throw deep? Why are you looking at gadget plays? Is that just to keep a defense honest? Is that because that seems to be what's next on the playlist? Is that the next play down the list on Brady's wrist? What? You know, that's actually a pretty good nitpick. When the basics are going well, I mean, you had a simple sideline wheel route, whichever you prefer. Show some of my provincialism here. You had a simple sideline wheel route to Shane Vereen, and it goes 83 yards for a touchdown. I mean, come on. That only happens because the Jets were so bad on defense that they allowed it to happen. That was from nothing, really, unfortunately, that Tom Brady or Shane Vereen did other than execute and do their job. That's all they did. The Jets had to really blow it up, and the Jets blew it up. Probably part of the reason why Fireman Ed has, you know, decided to hang up his cheerleaders' pom-poms. Because the Jets were just so incredibly horrible on Thursday night. I mean, that was bad. So, when the conventional stuff is working, why do you get fancy? Why do you go with, as I've had several of my broadcast friends say in the past, why do you go with the French pastry? Love that. That's a great analogy. Why do you go for the French pastry? When, you know, meat and potatoes works. Good nitpick. Couple of good ones. Brian in Essex, Vermont says, personally, I'm tired of hearing people complain about it. This is how Belichick has always run the Patriots. This is just how it is. If you guys don't like it, here's a suggestion. Become an NFL coach, get hired by the Patriots, and run the team how you like. And while you're at it, make sure you also include a decade of dominance rarely ever seen before. I know this is a rather flippant response, you think? But it's just a waste of time to continue griping about the same thing over and over again. But Brian, this is what we do. Isn't one of the definitions of insanity to expect something different? Not entirely. One of the definitions of insanity is to keep making the same mistake over and over again. I don't think we're making a mistake. I think we're making a statement. I think those are different. He says, well, Belichick's done this over and over and over, and it's insane to expect him to function differently all of a sudden. No, I don't think it's insane to expect him to function differently. What I think it is, you know, trying to point out the obvious flaws in his way of thinking. Keeping in mind, of course, that, you know, yeah, sure, there's been a decade of dominance, and sure, there's been a lot of success, but, hey, we've also seen that there's a crack in the armor. And we've also seen that every once in a while, you know, the emperor just might not be wearing any clothes. Think about that. Brian concludes by saying, just be thankful that this team is so consistently deep at most positions that when an injury does occur, we have numerous individuals ready to step up and fill the void. Well, and clearly that's one of the issues that we have talked about, that, you know, even though this team has had some injuries, because this team has had, obviously, the suspensions of two significant players this year, and let's not forget Brandon Spikes was a couple of years ago, that they have been deep enough and they have been working over the course of the last couple of seasons, especially to further deepen their roster, to have quality players in position to step up. And again, here's the quote, do their job. And that is what has separated the Patriots from other teams in the NFL by and large. Because they've got more of those guys ready to go. Whether they're young, they're old, high-priced, low-priced, middle-priced, they got guys. This is how this Patriots franchise, this team, this juggernaut, this dynasty, whatever you want to call it, clearly, you know, it's been the team of the 2000s, there's no doubt. And the Patriots would certainly like to keep that going in this decade of the teens, and they got to win. They do need to win the big one. They've been in the big game a couple of times recently, as we all know, and they've come short. And now if they're going to turn that around in this decade, then they've got to step up and figure out a way to win one. And so this is why we have the criticism. This is why we have the complaining. This is why we nitpick. Because absolutely, you know, Brian is right about this. Why are we nitpicking over a team that still wins and is still considered one of the top teams in the entire NFL every year? We have gotten spoiled because of our expectation level. That's fine. But we can't just sit here and say, okay, we're happy with the way things are. We're going to get fat and sassy now. Because when you do that, what happens? You lose. So you always need to be striving for perfection or striving for improvement, because the day that you stop striving for improvement, Brian, in Essex, Vermont, is the day that you become a loser, especially in professional sports. So complain, nitpick. This is what we do. That's why we have Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots Playbook, because sometimes it's ridiculous to nitpick over a 49-19 win or a 59-24 win. It's ridiculous. But we do it, A, because we're the Patriots, B, because actually some of the suggestions actually make sense. Now, I'm not going to begin to tell you that there are coaches or anybody else that are actually going to sit here and listen to these suggestions. Some might. Most don't. But when you keep the conversation level moving, and every once in a while there's a suggestion that comes out that's kind of like, wow, I hadn't really thought of that before. And it's also just in the course of public discussion here. I mean, you know, this is what we do. We discuss these things amongst Patriots fans, amongst football fans in general. And I realize we have, you know, other fans of other teams that join our programming from time to time, and we're grateful for that because we do talk about all things football. We just center around the New England Patriots. This is, after all, Patriots.com. But we do take a look at a lot of different things that affect the sport overall. And we look at other teams, and we look at other trends, and we look at things that, if they're not affecting the Patriots, they could affect the Patriots. Good emails. Good thought-provoking stuff today. Jonathan says, John, you are wrong on your stance of taking the starters out. Yes, I agree. They can't get hurt on the sideline, but the 21 points the Pats scored in 52 seconds prove how fast a game can change. Keep the starters in until you truly feel the game is done. Well, Jonathan, when the hell is the game done? Is the game done when you're up by 21 or done when you're done by 35? If the game's not done when you're up by 35, then when the hell is it done? 45? 55? When the hell is it done? Can you answer that question for me? That's ludicrous. He says there's a huge drop-off when Vince Wilfork, 75, is not on the field. Take McCourty, Mayo, Ninkovich, and others off the field. Perhaps we don't bend. Now we break on D. If on O, and if the Brady and the starters are not on the field, there's a better chance of going three and out. That's giving the other team the ball. Brady almost never gets hit anymore, so I'm not worried about him. Come on. Please don't be so naive. Really? He says, I'd love a mercy rule so our guys don't get hurt, but that's not going to happen. You're right. A mercy rule is not going to happen. That would insult the other team. That'll never happen, not in this sport. But come on, really? I'm not sure that I can even go on and justify that any longer. Thank you, Jonathan, but honestly, we're going to agree to disagree on this. When the game is over. Come on. When is the game over? I'd really love to know, when do you feel like the game is over? Is there a point level you have to reach when you're up by 3 touchdowns, 4 touchdowns, 8 touchdowns? When you score 100, when the hell is the game over? Because it seems like that's the way this team plays. The game isn't over till the Patriots get triple digits on the scoreboard. That's the impression that I'm getting here. Just a thought. Silly things to nitpick about. Crazy things to nitpick about. But overall, very little to complain when you're 8-3 and you're still thought of as one of the top teams in the entire NFL. Tim says, not too much for nitpicks this week, obviously. One thing that slipped by because of the second quarter, another missed short field goal miss. This is becoming a little bit of a concern. Not sure what the cause is, but it needs fixing. What was with cutting Branch and promoting Salas only to cut him a day or two later and then losing him on waivers? They knew what they had with Salas because he was practicing. Is Cunningham going to lapse back into a non-entity? The cynic in me questions how he hauled himself from the brink of bust to solid contributor. Now, that's an excellent point. You know, we're wondering about Jermaine Cunningham and whether or not he could actually be an effective player at all, that he was on the verge, as Tim says, of being a bust, works him back into having a pretty doggone good season, I think, by most estimations here, consistent at the very least, right? And now he's out for 4 weeks because of PED violations. So I think that's a legitimate question to ask. Will he lapse back into a non-entity? Well, I would say that it's probably, if he does, it's a good thing if he does, because that means somebody else has stood up and is not giving the job back. And whether that's Trevor Scott or Jake Beckett or, you know, somebody along those lines, then good, because that's just going to make your team deeper and stronger overall. Not sure if that's actually going to happen, but it certainly is worth, you know, considering. Jeff says, why does everybody act surprised about the outcome of the Jets game? Does anybody see how bad they really are? Yeah, the Jets were hideous, and they played right into the Patriots. And I don't think the Patriots played particularly outstanding on Thursday night. They scored 49 points, but we realized they scored, you know, what was it, 21 points off of, you know, normal everyday, you know, freakness, fumble returns, picks, that kind of stuff. You know, you take the weird plays out, that's a close game. 1 or 2 possession game. The Patriots, however, over the last 2 weeks have been able to make plays with their defense to turn these plays into points. and add to the overall total. Keep in mind, this is not an overwhelming offense that's juggernauting people here. This is an offense that's very good, still one of the top of the league, but now is getting contributions from the defense. Well, the defense is improved. It's still giving up yards, but this defense is now learning how to turn people over and then create opportunity out of it. And that might be all that this defense needs to be for this team to work itself back into position to go to another Super Bowl. It's possible. All right, let's give that some thought, shall we? Webradio at Patriots.com. I'm going to take a timeout here, and then we're going to wrap up the program today. We're going to let you listen in on the conference calls from earlier today with Bill Belichick and with Josh McDaniels, talking about not only getting ready for our Squish the Fish week here with the Miami Dolphins. Can't believe we're already first week of December just about, and haven't even played Miami once. That is so bizarre. You're finished with the Jets, you're finished with the Bills, and you haven't even played Miami once. That is a true quirk in the schedule. But that's what we're facing here this week. Josh McDaniels on the offense, too, that's coming up in the playbook.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio.
All right, Nelly, thanks. So as we take a look now and begin to turn our page toward the Miami Dolphins this week and the game coming up Sunday in Miami, earlier today, Bill Belichick had his opportunity to visit with Patriot beat writers, Dolphin beat writers, NFL journalists from all over the country in his weekly conference call and press conference that he holds to start talking about the Dolphins. I can't begin to tell you. I mean, certainly there's going to be the same old. Some of that's going to be in there. But at the same time, it is such a quirky bit of scheduling, the fact that you're through with your other two opponents in the AFC East in Buffalo and New York, and you swept them both, and yet you haven't even played the Dolphins yet. The Dolphins are coming off of a big win themselves in beating Seattle, although they did have Seattle at home. But I'm just saying that, you know, hey, they beat Seattle. The Patriots lost to Seattle. That right there should get your attention, especially if you're a Patriot. Plus, offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels with the Patriot beat writers as well. We haven't had a chance to really do that much of this in the playbook this season, so we thought today would be a good day to let you hear from the Patriots offensive coordinator as well and just how things are shaping up as we head into the final, 4 to 6 weeks of the regular season. Here's Coach Belichick, followed by Coach McDaniels.
You know, digging in here on the Dolphins, and you know, it was a real good win for him against Seattle on Sunday. Good football team, tough physical team, run the ball, stop the run. A lot of big guys, strong guys in the kicking game. And they're good on special teams, been very productive this year. The return game, they got big physical coverage players as well, good specialists. So, you know, it's a good team all the way around. And, you know, it'll be tough down there, like it always, Miami. So, got a lot of work to do, get back into the routine here. And try to get ready for these guys on the road.
Bill, I was wondering what your reaction was to the Jermaine Cunningham suspension.
Oh, well, it's a league matter, so it's, you know, really out of our hands.
As a follow-up to that, Bolden was suspended, I guess, 19 days ago. I was wondering if you addressed the team about that issue afterward.
I address the team every day, so we talk to the team on a regular basis. Look, unfortunately, sometimes on these things, you know, people make mistakes. But that's, everybody's accountable for them. So I think both situations are unfortunate. Neither one of them needed to happen. They weren't that important, but they were violations. So they are what they are.
So you just, obviously, I guess it's happened in a whirlwind, but what would be the plan going forward for replacing Jermaine?
We'll have to take a look at our options here. We could, basically there's two options. We could bring somebody in from outside and sign for the roster, or we could do something with a player on the practice squad. So we'll see. Take a look at our options, talk to Nick Casario, get his thoughts and input on it relative to the personnel that's available, like we usually do. Handle the same as we usually handle those type situations. You know, try to make the best decision for the team that we can for this week and the remaining five games.
On a different note, can you just speak about Nick McDonald and perhaps what he's brought to the team since he's joined it?
You know, Nick came to the team last year we made Green Bay's roster as a rookie, and then after being released at the end of preseason last year. And we started him on the practice squad, moved him up to the roster. He stepped in and played some games for us at center. And this year, he was kind of slowed a little bit at the beginning of the season, but has worked at all the inside spots, even played some tackle in preseason. And so he's been a very versatile player for us. And this year, most of his playing time has come at guard, as well as some tight end situations and you know, our bigger personnel groupings. But most of it's been a guard, so he's played really center, guard, and tackle, all three positions for us since he's been here. And that's pretty rare for any offensive lineman to line up at all those spots. And he's done a good job for us.
Field Yates, followed by Michael Whitmer.
Bill, just to kind of build off the offensive line thoughts, I don't think we've had a chance to ask you about Marcus Zusevic since you guys added him to the active roster last week. We didn't get to see him in training camp, obviously. Could you kind of introduce us to him as a player, what some of his strengths are, and what you've seen from him so far?
Field, we didn't get to see him in training camp either, other than jog around in shorts. But he just started practicing a couple weeks ago, as you know, and had a real good career at Iowa. Got hurt last year at the combine in February, and it really has been rehabbing all the way up until the point where he was pretty much up to the point where he was allowed to begin practicing a few weeks back. And I think he's worked really hard. He's made good progress physically with his overall strength and conditioning. And technique-wise, he's definitely behind, as you would expect. But he's working hard to catch up on that. And played tackle in college. He'll work there for us. He also has possibly the physical attributes to play inside a guard, similar to the Marcus Cannon type of discussion. I mean, similar but different, but I think there could be a possibility of that, but his primary position has been tackle, so it's kind of where he's at for now, and hopefully he can get some reps in practice and with the scout team and be able to improve the techniques of his game, because I think that physically he's come along well. He just needs practice and live snaps and seeing things at the speed that we play at to improve. He continues to work hard and pay attention to the little details. I think he could have a chance to help us at some point.
Yeah.
Cool.
Kind of to piggyback the offensive line questions today, Logan's missed some games here in the past. Sebastian didn't play on Thursday. You kind of plugged in Nick and Donald Thomas, and maybe some people would think if that's the case that the play would slip, but Tom really hasn't been touched much, and you've run the ball pretty well. So maybe just to speak about those two guys coming in and the line really performing at a pretty high level, it seems.
You're talking about Nick and Donald?
Yeah, coming in and really not seeing a whole lot of slippage in that area.
Right. Well, Nick played quite a bit last week against Indianapolis, and then for Dan Connolly, who was, who didn't play, and then this past week, then Dan came back and Marcus played for Sebastian. So it's really been all three of those guys, although Donald played most. And Donald came with us last year, similar to the situation with Nick McDonald, except that he wasn't practice squad eligible, so he Donald was on the roster from the beginning of the season. Nick started on the practice squad and then came onto the roster. But both those guys joined us last year from other teams. And they've both really come along and improved and given us good flexibility on the offensive line, playing both guard spots and center. So both those players have played at all three positions, in addition to Nick playing some snaps at tackle in the preseason, which he did in college. But their ability to pick up our system, to have versatility, work well with the other players and combination of players, whoever that happened to be, whether it was the tackle on their respective sides or Wendy at center, has been good, and their level of play has been good. And then Marcus, really got a lot of playing time in preseason. And then when Sebastian kind of worked his way back into the lineup at the beginning of the season, then Marcus's play time went from about half the game in Tennessee and dropped down, and then Sebastian kind of regained that starting position. Then Marcus stepped in and played the whole game against the Jets last week and did a real good job for us there, in addition to throughout the course of the year doing some short yardage and goal line, multiple tight end type sets where, he's kind of like Nick McDonald, also is in some of those formations, but not really a high number of plays, but just added responsibilities for them. And they've all done well, so they're all, young guys in their relatively early part of their careers that have come in here in a variety of circumstances. All of them really missed training camp last year for one reason, not either they weren't here or, in Mark's case, didn't participate in training camp last year. And I think that the off-season program and then their ability to go from last year to the off-season program, to the OTAs, to training camp, that those players have all really, all three of them have improved significantly from where they were this time or even going back to, September of 2011.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, sorry, that's kind of what I was getting at. Maybe I didn't phrase the question properly, but it seems like that there's been a lot of moving parts, and you've been able to, like you mentioned, plug in guys in different spots or multiple spots.
And I guess I'm just, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of change in production, no matter who was in there. And I know we saw a lot of it last year, too, with that offensive line. You know, you've got to have guys that can play multiple spots. You pride yourself on that. But this year especially, I think, it seems like there's been a lot of revolving door kind of action, and yet the line has played pretty well.
Right. Well, last year, as you know, we had more movement at center and right tackle. And we had four different centers start games for us, and then Sebastian played a little over half the season at right tackle, maybe it was right around half the season. And so Nate played quite a bit at right tackle, and then Nate played some at tight end as well, and in those type of formations. Whereas this year, other than the Jets game, Sebastian's played in every game, although the first couple games he didn't play the entire game, and Marcus alternated with him in there. But for the most part, we've been pretty steady there at the tackle spots and with Wendell at center. We had a lot of competition at center in training camp, but once the season started, Ryan's been, he's been consistent in there, and Sebastian and Nate, for the most part, have been pretty consistent at tackle. Like I said, other than this Jets game, where we've had really a lot of movement has been at guard with Logan, Dan, Donald, and then, Nick at times playing in there as well. So it's kind of similar to last year in that it hasn't been the same five guys every game, but this year the positions have been more at guard. The change has been more at guard, and last year the change was more at center and right tackle for the most part. So it's, I guess it's similar but different the way that's turned out.
So Trevor Scott is someone we saw mostly playing special teams throughout the year until the last 2 weeks. He's gotten more snaps on the line. The defensive line. I'm just wondering how you feel if you've done with those opportunities in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, I think Trevor's done well, and he's had, he had those opportunities. He had some opportunities to play defensively earlier in the year, too. Then, he was out there for a few games in the middle part of the season. Then, we got him back, after the bye 3 weeks ago when he and Tracy came back for the Buffalo game. So, but Trevor's a versatile player. He's a player that can play in coverage situations and has done that in the past. He's played outside linebacker, similar to, Ninkovich, that type of a role. But he's played more down for us this year and played more down in his career. But he also does have that flexibility, also very good in the kicking game, kickoff, punt coverage, punt return. All those things, positions where he has to, run and cover space, but at the same time be physical and play in the open field and match up against other players of his size, linebacker, fullback, tight end types in the kicking game in those roles. So Trevor's smart. He works hard. He's in very good condition, and he's a good athlete. He can run. He's quick. He's long. He's got good length at the end of the line of scrimmage to handle some of those bigger tackles or the tight ends with the 6'5", 6'6", type tight ends with long arms and that type of thing. So he's done a solid job when he's had the opportunity. We've had a lot of competition at those positions with Rob and Chandler, of course, and Jermaine, Justin, Jay. So it's been a very competitive position, but he's done well when he's had the opportunity, and he's contributed well a lot for us in the kicking game.
Bill, I was curious how you'd characterize the Dolphins' defense under this new coaching regime in terms of their style of play.
Well, I think it's probably most similar, Mike, to the Cincinnati defense. Kevin Coyle was there at Cincinnati with with Marvin Lewis and that scheme, of course, with Marvin kind of goes back to Baltimore and Pittsburgh. So there's a 3-4 or element to it with some over and under, if you will, like the Bengals play. I mean, it's a three-man line, but it's a four-man line, Baltimore-Cincinnati-ish. And they run a lot of pressure. They do a lot of different blitz zones with their inside linebackers up in the line a lot, again, like Cincinnati does, but that combines with edge pressure and it's a combination of a blitz zone with some man pressure with a variety of coverages. They don't usually just sit in one thing, you know, all day. That's not really their style. And, of course, they have two very good edge players with, you know, Koumissi and Wake, and they have some big physical inside players like Odrick and Solei, Starks, and a couple active linebackers, Burnett, Dansby. So I think personnel-wise, they're kind of similar to Cincinnati, and scheme-wise, they're similar to Cincinnati. George Edwards is their linebacker coach, and, of course, he was there last year and was up in Buffalo prior to that. And so he definitely has some background in the 3-4 and those type schemes too. So I think there's a little bit of that influence as well.
Hey Josh, how you doing?
Good, Tom, how you doing?
Good. I wanted to ask about some of the guys on the offensive line who maybe coming into the year were, at least outside the organization, were not seen as being frontline guys, and the contributions that they've made. You know, some shuffling, and Ryan Wendell ended up at center, and he's more than stood up inside. And then also, Donald Thomas and Nick McDonald and Marcus Cannon seem to play, you know, well, very well the other night. So I just wanted to get your feelings on these guys, specific to what they've done so far this year, and if you're pleased with what they've given you.
Yeah, they, I think the, you know, when you were asking the question, the first thing I think I would say is that I have incredible respect and appreciation for their coach. And I think that, you know, when you talk about those players and the roles that they play on our team and the contributions that they've made, I don't think you can talk about them without mentioning Dante, because, you know, he does an incredible job at preparing all of them as if they're all going to start and play for four quarters. You know, he makes sure that they have reps. He makes sure that they understand all the communication. And, you know, I have an incredible appreciation and respect for him as their coach. You know, with the guys you mentioned, the inside guys with Ryan being a starter and playing, you know, I would say really solidly inside for us all year. You know, he's a smart guy. He's been in our program. I think it's a tribute to him, to what he's gone through in terms of working his way from the practice squad to, you know, just learning multiple positions and being on the ready for, you know, a number of years now and trying to improve himself all the while. And then this year he really gets his opportunity, and I think he's really making the most of it. He's a smart guy. He can play more than one position in there. Certainly he's just playing center for us this year. But I think the value that he brings in there, the intelligence that he has, his ability to work hand-in-hand with Tom in our system and get the communication to the other linemen is invaluable. And again, I think, you know, just his overall execution and performance has been really good for us. With Donald and Nick, you know, one of the things that doesn't necessarily get mentioned probably enough is their versatility, because a lot of those inside players, when you keep them on your roster and you continue to develop them, if they're not starters, one of the big things that they need to be able to do for you is play more than one spot. because it's hard to take a lineman to the game that can't back up more than one position in there. And they've all played center, you know, at certain times, whether it's practice, preseason games, they all played center in there. Both guard spots on either side where the communication gets flipped around. And I think that there's a tremendous amount of value in that alone. And then to go in there in big games and really allow us to continue to play the way that we try to play, regardless of who's in there, you know, I think that just says a lot for how much confidence, one, we have in them, and then, you know, their ability to go in there and execute and compete at a high level, you know, and not really force us to do less than what we want to do. And they're all physical, smart football players that understand our system. They've been around enough. They certainly get taught extremely well by Dante. And I think we as a staff have great confidence if any of those guys are in the game that they're going to be able to hold up and do their job. And then Marcus, lastly, you know, went in again. Here's another young guy that's had an opportunity to learn, and you know, he's practiced a ton. You know, he got to play a lot in the preseason, certainly without Seabass in there, and took a lot of reps that were extremely valuable, I think, to him. And then to finally get his opportunity to go in there and really play a full game the other night, and then hold up the way that he did, and handle, you know, the communication on the road, the silent cadence, all the different variables that go along with playing a road game in New York. You know, really pleased with the way he performed too. We got a big performance out of him. So it's really encouraging when you can have, you know, enough depth at any position to go in there and continue to play the way you want to play. And I think we all have great confidence that the offensive line can do that.
I have one follow on Dante, and I know that you guys subscribe to the notion of you speak for yourself, but Dante doesn't say anything about himself. So aside from the X's and O's, what is it that makes him such a talented coach? What are the demands, what are the marching orders that he gives to guys that gets them to respond almost uniformly in a successful way, despite the fact some of them were undrafted or low-round draft picks, and he gets that consistent performance from these guys? How does he do it?
Well, I think it begins with his work ethic. You know, he's here. He's usually the first guy in the building, and I think that, it, you know, the way he works, the way he approaches his job, you know, it kind of demands respect, because all he does and all he cares about when he's here is making sure that his guys are prepared to do what we're asking them to do in the game plan, and he really goes to every length to make sure that that happens. And I think the way they see him work, they immediately appreciate what they have in him as a teacher. I think, you know, he demands that they do it a certain way. He finds a way to communicate with different players in different ways, because, you know, they're not all the same. They don't all learn the same way, but he finds a way, and he's obviously had an incredible amount of experience at dealing with different players and over the course of his long career. But I just, you know, he knows the different buttons to push. He pushes his guys extremely hard. But at the same time, I think they have an incredible admiration and respect for him. And they know that he's putting them in positions to be successful. And I think that, you know, goes hand in hand with his understanding of X's and O's and the techniques that he knows how to teach so well up front, and the way that he goes about improving each one of their games individually. And then all, you know, all together, I think that's why you see a collective group of players that can go out there and play together as a unit so well. So, again, it's no secret I have a great appreciation and admiration for him as a coach and a teacher and a friend, and I think he does a great job, and I think they all respect the heck out of him.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Josh. Can you talk a little bit about Shane Vereen, you know, what he's brought to the offense this year and how you feel he's progressed since the start of the season?
Yeah, Shane's a young guy that works hard. You know, he's had, you know, in certain situations, in certain games, limited opportunities, but I think he's really come to work and practiced well every day. He's backed up a number of roles for us in certain games and then played in different packages throughout the course of the season. He's a guy that can, you know, do things in a running game. He certainly can do things in the passing game, has good hands, very good speed, and he's smart. And that really gives, you know, him an opportunity to get in there against some of the more difficult defensive teams that force, you know, us to handle the pressures and the blitz pickup. He can go in there and really gives us confidence that he can handle that part of the game as well. But, he's a guy that, you know, he didn't get a lot of opportunity last year because of the injuries and has really made the most of his chances this year. And I think he just continues to try to work hard and get better and create more of a role for himself as we go forward.
Has there been anything about Shane that surprised you since you've been with the team?
No, I wouldn't say that. I did some work on Shane when he came out of Cal, and I liked him. You know, I was in St. Louis when he came out, and we liked him then, and I felt like he had a really good skill set to do a lot of different things in an offense, and obviously was a bright guy. So all those things have really showed up, and I think that Shane's, you know, continuing to work hard, and he's really made the most of his opportunities, especially lately when we've had a chance to get him the ball.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh.
Hey, Josh, how are you?
Hey, Karen, good. How are you?
Good, thanks. The team has produced 219 points in the last five games, 108 in the last two. Not all are on the offense, but a lot are. What's clicked or what have you seen from the offense that you've liked during that time frame?
Well, I think, you know, when you score points, I always have felt like it's a function of the team playing well. It's certainly not just an offensive, an offensive statistic. I know that our job is to go out there and score as many as we can when we have the ball. But as you mentioned, there's been a number of scores that have had nothing to do with offensive football, and I think that's, again, a tribute to the way that the team performs in those games. You know, offensively, I think we always have that mindset that we want to go out and score 7 points. I think that, you know, the less mistakes you make, the better chance you have to execute a number of plays in a row that give you an opportunity to continue to move the ball and stay on the field. I think our third down, just our overall third down production and ability to convert in short yardage and stay on the field offensively, I think we've gotten better over the course of this season. I don't think there's one specific reason for that. I think Coach has really allowed us to work really hard at that in practice, you know, and just try to focus on those situations that really dictate whether or not you can stay on the field. And we all know that third down is really as important a down as there is offensively. And, you know, there's a lot of things you have to handle on third down. We've had a lot of different contributions from a lot of different people. But, you know, overall, the ability to perform and execute under pressure on that down has given us a chance to continue to move the ball to try to go down there and score more points as the season's gone on. So, you know, each game is different. Each week is different. Each opponent is different. And each challenge is completely unique from the past challenges. So, you know, it's going to be a different challenge this week against Miami, a whole different set of defenses and things we got to deal with and players that we have to handle that they have on their team. And, again, hopefully our execution and our ability to handle the third down situations that come up in the game will give us an opportunity to move the ball and stay on the field and ultimately go down there and try to score points.
Thanks, Josh.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.